morning. Welcome to Score Values on 670 The Score. I'm Adam Staszynski. First up on this week's episode, we'll be spotlighting a new podcast called the Black Businesses Matter Podcast, which celebrates black voices and champions black businesses around Chicago. And we're joined now on Score Values on 670 The Score by Larvetta Lofton. She is the host of the new Black Businesses Matter podcast. So, Larvetta, first of all, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's just start at the top here. The Black Businesses Matter podcast. It's a new podcast. So, first off, tell me why you decided to start this.
Absolutely. Yes, it is new. We just reached a year old. Super excited. I started the podcast merely because I'm actually a former broadcast journalist, and I knew that I had a love for the radio TV world. And in the midst of COVID and the things that were occurring during COVID with the injustice, you know, I was able to connect with my community as someone who has been an entrepreneur for, you know, several years, over 10 years, running an agency and really being connected to my community and making an impact in every way that I can, you know, as a marketer. Mm-hmm. I wanted to connect to my community. And so during COVID, we did live every week to really just keep people abreast of what Black businesses were being faced with, talking to thought leaders, what should we be doing? I was told that, you know, currency is made in a crisis. So really talking about that. So we started doing that every week, and then we stopped. We got tired of video. And we wanted to create something that as things open up, that we did not forget the value that Black businesses bring to communities. Mm-hmm. Merely it's the first job for some people that live in those areas. It's the first place where they gain skills, because often what we don't know is Black businesses are the largest employers of Black people. And so we have the ability to really continue to make an impact and really create equity in places that weren't fair. So I wanted to really do a podcast where I could bring amazing thought leaders, faith leaders, D&I practitioners, and just people who are advocates in supporting and making sure that Black businesses are part of their supplier channel as we open up, because there was so much money being given, there were grants, there was all of this. And then we felt like, okay, when things get back to normal, will Black businesses and minority businesses still be at the forefront to make an impact?
So where do you feel there's a gap then when it comes to Black businesses?
Yeah. So there is a major gap, because what we don't know is that there are several ways that a Black business is created. One is they are pushed into it because they were laid off. They were treated fairly. They weren't being paid fairly. They had to undergo a major circumstances, you know, loved one got sick. And so entrepreneurship was their path to be able to create wealth. And so what has happened over the, you know, 20 years of me being an entrepreneur, I've watched people become entrepreneurs and I've been fascinated by the stories. So what I found was that we knew these businesses exist, but we didn't know the stories behind them. We didn't know the why behind them, why they started it. And many of our Black business owners were never featured. They were never featured on any platform, radio, TV, you name it, but they were doing amazing work. And we thought that their work should be celebrated and should be told, because the stories that we've been able to meet with people are just absolutely fascinating, in how they are creating scholarship funds so neighborhood kids could go and achieve their dreams. Many of them are creating wealth opportunities. They're hiring Black people so they can go and purchase homes, and they can be, you know, they can be the wealth provider for their homes. And so that story was not being told. A lot of the stories that we hear, we love our musicians, we love all this, but we haven't really understood that many of these new musicians are built in a business and a foundation, that those stories have not been told. And we felt that it was time that we tell these stories for many of them during COVID, many businesses are thriving. The reason why, the other reason why I was passionate about telling the story was because, well, telling Black businesses matter and Black stories was because I followed the Forbes list in 2008 with the financial crisis. Mm. And I saw all of these amazing businesses that were started as a result of the crisis. Well, what I noticed was that I didn't see enough Black businesses there because we were not being able to, our graded fair. We have lack of access. We have lack of resources. We have all these things. And so I said, what about we created this podcast where there could be a Black and Brown Forbes list, that there were businesses that were created during a crisis like the pandemic and that are thriving. And so what would that look like? And so I thought it was necessary. And we've been doing this. And I remember one of our guests and sponsors, he said, what would it look like if Black businesses were overfunded? Because overfunding is more than just money. It's resources. It's staffing. It's operations. It's HR. It's those services that are never giving fair opportunities, because oftentimes we see, Black businesses in the food industry, but we don't see the whole totality and the whole story of that Black business.
Oh, that sounds so fascinating. And so you mentioned that you typically do these podcasts live, correct?
I do them. Well, let me say this. I do them every week. So we record them. We're doing our first live event where we're coming out of the office to be able to, connect with people face to face. But we typically we're recording every Friday. But we were doing live videos during COVID when people were stuck in, because people wanted to see people. People wanted to see that people were vibrant. So we were doing that previously before we switched to, a full podcast that was an audio and really giving it its own personality. At the time during the pandemic, we were just trying to solve a problem of people being able to connect. Mm-hmm. And so we thought that that was important. And so we evolved that, which the former name was Crisis Currency Roundtable. And we evolved out of that to now the Black Businesses Matter podcast.
Great. So, I remember during the height of the pandemic, you're just kind of looking for as much interaction as you can get. So that must sounds like it really would have helped fill that need. So, well, the reason I bring that up is because this coming Thursday, February 16th, you are having this live event that you were referencing. So why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, I'm excited. It's my first time coming out as this podcast host of Black Businesses Matter. We're hosting this event. There's, we're going to record. They are not live. We are going to record. They put too much pressure on me on the state of economic inclusion. And I'm excited. We have Andrea Zopp, who is a managing partner at Cleveland Avenue, which is a VC firm in Chicago. And so they've launched a fund called Cast Us. So they're really talking about this opportunity to include, many Black businesses so that they continue to advance the work that they do as business leaders. And then we have Marcus Miller, who is the VP of Equity Officer for the Obama Foundation. And so the reason why it was important to bring both of those leaders to the table is because both of them are making an impact in the economic space. One is, building this incredible library on the south side of Chicago and ensuring that Black businesses, are part of that ecosystem, and at least 60% of that, because we know what the south side means for many of the residents that live there, but making sure that there are Black businesses that are part of that, overall campaign and investment. And so we're going to talk about that, but we're also going to have fun. We're going to celebrate Black excellence. We have a number of business leaders who run, big companies, really, really large companies. Some of them, I'll just throw out some of them, coming from Millhouse Engineering Construction Company. We've got Chromix, which they've been on Shark Tank. So we're bringing some of our past guests back into the building to really connect with people who really want to celebrate Black History Month, because it is during Black History Month, of really being able to collaborate. The other reason why I built the podcast was because I wanted to serve that the podcast be a bridge for collaboration and an opportunity for people to collaborate more with Black businesses. We're not saying that we'd be separate, but how can we be included in this ecosystem of inclusion? And so really bringing this to be a day of currency, a day of collaboration, a day of connection, all in one room. We have two amazing liquor brands. We have Love Corkscrew, who is a wine black company, tequila, Disbelief Tequila, which is a black tequila brand that is sold, that is global, but they do a lot of distribution in Chicago and Tennessee. So really being able to be held on the south side of Chicago, which I think is just the mecca to black businesses, or at least we want to, service-based businesses. So we're excited. It is February 16th. That's from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. You know, people can learn about it multiple ways. We certainly have it on our website at thel3agency.com. It's on Eventbrite if you search Black Businesses Matter. We just wanted to do something, you know, because the world was closed for so long. For many of us who maybe frequent the South Side, you know, it's some dark places. I mean, it's very desolate. A lot of businesses have closed down and shut down. And so it has been a sad moment for many of us. And I think that's the part that we want, is to bring light back into those communities and be able to see that there is Black excellence within, you know, these various sides. And I want to make sure that people understand that, you know, I'm born and raised in Chicago on this, you know, low end of Chicago, but I frequent all sides of Chicago. I'm not one that just, while I live on the south side, I freak in the west side, I freak in the north side. And I just want more and more people to live like that, to be able to frequent other sides, to support those sides, buy from them, have services that they can render out of those areas. That's important for us. And that's where we want to talk about inclusion. And really, this idea of separation has been going on for so long. So when do we change? And I think coming out of pandemic, many of us are still standing, still have businesses, still have an opportunity to make an impact.
That's great. And so just a couple more questions about this event itself. So it's in Hyde Park, correct, at Polsky Exchange North?
Yes.
And you mentioned how people can sign up through Eventbrite and through the L3 agency website, correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Correct.
And so is there a cost to attend the
event?
There is.
Okay. There is a cost. The cost is, I want to say the cost is $150, and I'm only saying that because we had an early bird rate. And so now I believe it is now at $150. We have food, we have drinks, we're going to have a recording, we have connections. So it's just going to be a night. And let me say this, Adam. And the other part is, we want folks to get dressed up. So we want you to pull out, you know, for the women, that black dress that's been sitting there. For some of us, it might be a little snug because, you know, we're all coming out of the pandemic. And for my men, you know, we want you to come as dapper as you like to come, whatever that is. And I say that because, you know, nowadays we don't have to wear suits. We can wear our sneakers with our pants and a cool hat. And so we just want everyone to come and have a good time and enjoy themselves and experience Black excellence for one night in a place that we believe their connections will be had.
And this is Score Values on 670 The Score. We're speaking with Larvetta Lofton. She is the host of the Black Businesses Matter podcast. We were just speaking there about an event they have coming up on Thursday, February 16th in Hyde Park, a recording for the podcast, plus the, you know, as we've been talking about, a big event in itself. Something else I wanted to ask you, though, Larvetta, you're a black business owner yourself. So I'm curious what some of the biggest barriers of success are that you've noticed.
So, you know, for someone who, you know, has been committed to making sure that there is inclusion as a marketer, I run a marketing company, and making sure that we are being culturally sensitive in how we market to and help our clients to market to their customers or their stakeholders. And one of those biggest barriers that I see is really, it comes from a place that I think is around equity and fairness. If we look at it from the standpoint in access, so if we look at it from the standpoint of when a black business may start their business next to someone who is non-black, it's not fair because there are things that, you know, that another black business can receive, whether that's capital resources, whether that is loans, personal savings, et cetera. because they're impacted by credit scores, right? Mm. And so those credit scores will then impact them to be able to what? Be able to get capital so they can hire people. A lot of Black businesses are faced with that, and I too, is how do you staff up? How do you scale up? And you scale up when there's acquisition opportunities, when someone could potentially say, I want to acquire with you, put some money into your account. Together we collaborate, we build this company. Now you have access of a robust machine that could fill you with HR, which you've never had, and operations that you've never had. So many of our Black businesses are bleeding in some cases because they really don't have that level of fairness in how they're be able to do their business because they built this business nearly, as I mentioned, as perhaps they were pushed out, they were laid off, they were undervalued. And so this was their way to say, I need to care for my families. I have to make a living for my family. So I want to open up this business. And when I think of service-based business, which I'm a service-based business, we really saw that to be something that was invisible. We saw all the things that the city had provided for a lot of our brick and mortars, which we say is very important. Never want to take that. But there were service-based businesses that were helping them, whether that was legal, whether that was marketing, whether that was HR. And there are amazing, outstanding service Black businesses that are making a difference because as a unit, they're the largest employers of Black people, and they hire from the community. I can tell you this, that show that, you know, businesses, you know, in the 70s and 80s, even in the 90s of Chicago, is that people worked within 1 to 5 miles to their homes, and they were a local Black business. But when you don't see that anymore in these marginalized communities, what has happened is that many of those people are going to get skills in other areas and other neighborhoods. So they're spending a lot of transportation, which is eating a lot of their costs. So we really have to really think closely around service-based businesses because service-based businesses really help, I think, fuel our brick and mortars because there's just services that they need to be able to function that business and at it, you know, at full capacity. And when you talk about barriers, it's barriers as much as during COVID. Many of our Black brick and mortar just couldn't keep their doors open because many of them were not online. Many of them were not given, you know, didn't know how to get on the food delivery services. They were unaware of that because that kind of information is not given in those communities. So when you talk about it from an equity standpoint, it's unfair that it's one side of the area of Chicago that lacks Wi-Fi. There is a part of an area in Chicago that lacks Wi-Fi. So how can that business thrive? It can't. And so that level of barrier really hurts our businesses, hurts our families, impacts wealth, impacts, you know, for Chicago, real estate. It impacts all of that because one of the things that I say is vibrant businesses create vibrant neighborhoods. And when you look at, and these are businesses that we all look to be able to do it. We see it in other neighborhoods and they are businesses that become the cornerstones to people to meet, to connect, to show up for. And so I think it's important that we continue to make this to be the cornerstone of these marginalized communities and really celebrate and invite more services inside of that ecosystem.
Wow, that's so much fascinating information there. I appreciate that. So, and that's something that I guess I never really thought about there that you mentioned that there's a part of the city of Chicago. I mean, this is the third largest city in the country that doesn't have Wi-Fi. And that that has to be such an extraordinary barrier like you were talking about, because, you know, specifically if you're a restaurant, say, so much of your sales for restaurant these days are online. And so if you don't, you know, if you don't have access that way, I mean, that's such an extraordinary barrier.
It is. And many of our business, but we didn't know that till COVID happened, right? Mm-hmm. We didn't know this, that even existed. I didn't either, Adam. I didn't know that there were parts in the city of Chicago that didn't until we started to see the suffering and the fees. Because there is a such thing as price gouging, right? That when you said barrier, there were costs, there were fees being given to certain communities that were not the same fees in a different community. Those things are happening. Mm-hmm. And so we have to expose this and understand that. So then how does that business be able to to make sure that their families are able to eat, right? That they're able to go, they're able to make payroll, they're able to pay taxes. All of those things make up a business owner. And we just haven't seen that in its totality. And oftentimes, we're looking for them to have this. Like, why you don't have this? Because those resources are not in these communities. And when I think about equity, I always think that the other part of equity is goodness. Goodness should be for everyone. It should be for everyone. Mm-hmm. But we've been misguided to believe that it hasn't been for everyone. And so that has greatly impacted, you know, owners, Black business owners, to be able to do the things that I truly believe that they were, you know, they enjoy, that they love to do. And what we also found too, Adam, is the passion that business owners have, I am just amazed. I mean, the passion that they share just is so inspiring. And so to be able to hear those stories and to know that these stories, you know, perhaps were never told, but they're now being told. And I mean, I remember one of our, he was a math teacher and opened up a popcorn shop. And he just wanted to do that all his life. But what he realized is that those students that he was teaching was coming into the popcorn shop to do their homework. Those are the stories that we get to hear. And we get to hear and be inspired that popcorn shop isn't just a shop that just popcorn, but it becomes a safe space for some students to be able to do their homework because they're in communities that lack those kinds of resources at home, that to be able to have those lives. So those businesses become sometimes a safe haven to some of those communities that don't have the same resources as many of us.
Wow, that's a great story. I'm glad that you brought that up. So, Loretta, we're starting to run out of time here. So the last thing that I'll ask you, for if anyone wants to check out your podcast, against the Black Businesses Matter podcast, where is it available? Is it available on pretty much any podcast platform?
On any platform, Black Businesses Matter. You will see a lovely face pop up, who happens to be mine. And so that pops up and you can check out our episodes. And we've been doing this. We're in our fourth season. So we've, you know, created different seasons.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much, Loretta. This is a fascinating conversation. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me. You have a great one.
Again, that was Loretta Lofton. She is the host of the Black Businesses Matter podcast, which you can find wherever you get your podcasts. This is Score Values on 670 The Score. I'm Adam Staszynski. Up next, the issue of diversity in the NFL has been a bit of a hot-button topic in recent years. NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell held a press conference this last week where that issue again came up, but in an area that you might not expect. Dan Bernstein and Lawrence Holmes discussed that issue and that press conference moment this past week.
Jim Trotter, who works for NFL Media, like works for NFL.com, works for NFL Network, had a really good come-to-Jesus, speak-to-power moment with Roger Goodell concerning NFL Network.
Hey, Roger. Jim Trotter, NFL Media. You and other league officials have said that the league's commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion extend beyond the sidelines and beyond the front offices, and is applied to all aspects of the company. I've worked at NFL Media for 5 years. During those 5 years, we have never had a Black person in senior management in our newsroom. That's a problem because we cover a league who, according to league data, the player population is 60 to 70% Black, which means that there is no one who looks like these players at the table when decisions are being made about how they are covered. More concerning is that for a year plus now, we have never had a full-time Black employee on the news desk, which again is a problem because we cover a league whose player population is 60 to 70% Black, according to league data. I asked you about these things last year, and what you told me is that the league had fallen short and you were going to review all of your policies and practices to try and improve this. And yet a year later, nothing has changed. You know, James Baldwin once said that I can't believe what you say because I see what you do. And so I would ask you as an employee, when are we in the newsroom going to have a Black person in senior management, and when will we have a full-time Black employee on the news desk?
Well, Jim, I am not in charge of the newsroom. Can I answer your question? As you point out, it's the same question you asked last year. And we did go back, and we have reviewed everything we've been doing across the league. And we are looking at everything from vendors that we're working with to partners that we're working with to ownership, where we've seen significant changes in diversity just this year. And I'm not specific, do not know specifically about the media business. We'll check in again with our people, but I am comfortable that we made significant progress across the league. I can't answer the specific questions. Some of the data you may have raised there may be accurate, maybe not. Last year, I was told some of it wasn't. We'll get to you on that. We want to make progress across the board, and that includes in the media room. And so those are things that we'll continue to look at and hopefully make real progress to. I can't answer because I do not know specifically what those numbers are today.
Wow. Maybe accurate, maybe not. So you have the audacity to tell him he could be wrong about his own workplace?
Right. That you don't know anything about, according to you. That he doesn't know who senior management at NFL Network is.
At his own workplace, you're questioning the veracity of a veteran professional reporter.
Asking a follow-up question from a year ago. You think he didn't get his ducks in a row before he stood in front of the public to ask essentially his boss a question?
You talk about speaking truth to power?
Damn.
And with the James Baldwin quote in there?
Fam, let me tell you. It's a great James Baldwin quote that he pulled, too. That is... And look, I've got friends who work over at NFL Network, and you'd be surprised at the lack of money that the NFL puts into the NFL Network.
Really?
You'd be shocked. Considering the amount of money that they make, and that it's one of the vehicles, it's not the most important vehicle, because obviously they have the broadcast partnerships, but they don't put a lot of money into that thing. They should. I think it's a vehicle that has a money making capability. But I love that Jim Trotter was like, consequences be damned.
I am not in charge of the newsroom. Can I answer your question?
You're kind of in charge of it though, Raj.
Like you say, Goodell. That was terrible.
It was a really awful answer.
And what he could have said was, to the extent that I'm responsible for it, I've failed in that regard.
And Jim, you're right. I should have done a better job following up. I promise you, I will follow up after our comment. And let's have a conversation, because Roger's known to do that with people. Mm-hmm. I should know, because I've had that conversation with Roger and his people after a press conference. They are more than happy to come talk to you and ask where you're from and who you work for.
That's it for this week's edition of Score Values on 670 The Score. If there's a topic you'd like to hear about on a future edition of the show, or if you'd like to share information about an upcoming charitable event, send us an email at scorevalues670@gmail.com. That's scorevalues670@gmail.com. I'm Adam Stasinski. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Score Values on 670 The Score.